Today's episode of the Axial Creative Podcast is brought to you by Skillshare. To get 2 months of Skillshare for just 99 cents, visit skillshare.com/creative. Hey everyone, welcome to the Accidental Creative Podcast. My name is Todd Henry. I'm your host. I'm also the author of a bunch of books, including The Accidental Creative, Die Empty, Louder Than Words, and the new book, Herding Tigers, Be the Leader That Creative People Need. And here on the show, we talk about you and your creative process and how to be prolific, brilliant, and healthy all at the same time as a creative pro, as somebody who has to go to work, figure it out, make it up, design, write, build every single day. There's a lot of pressure that comes with that. And we also love to feature the stories of people who are out there in the world creating wonderful work. And on today's show, we have Harris III. Harris is a practicing magician. He travels the world performing for audiences, but he's also the driving force behind an organization called Story, which runs the Story Conference that I had the chance to speak at a few months ago, and also helps organizations better tell their story. So we're going to talk today about the power of story and some of the things that he's learned over time about how we can tell more compelling stories that pull people into our narrative and help us get our work out to the people that will really care about it. Before we jump into that, a couple of things. First of all, I have a new show. It's called The Daily Creative. It's little sound bites every single day, Monday through Friday, to help you get your day started right. It releases at 4 a.m. Eastern every day, and it's just like 1 to 5 minutes, sometimes 2 minutes, sometimes 5 minutes, but it's just a quick tip, principle, idea, something to help you get your day started right. So visit accidentalcreative.com/dailycreative, and you can find out how you can subscribe by email or just subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, wherever you listen to podcasts, subscribe. We should be there. So again, it's called The Daily Creative with Todd Henry. Also, today's episode is brought to you by Skillshare. What are you doing today, this week, this month, even this year to develop your skill set, to position yourself to be able to bring more value to your clients and to the world? What are you doing to pursue your curiosity, to develop your understanding of the world, and to shape and hone and sharpen your ability to deliver value to the people around you? Well, if you want to continue growing, if you want to continue developing in your career, if you want to continue climbing the rugged mountain and building a body of work you can be proud of, you need to develop new skills. Skillshare is your partner in doing just that. Skillshare is an online learning platform with over 20,000 classes in business, marketing, technology, design, and more. You can take classes in social media marketing, data science, web development, you name it, they've got it. So whether you're trying to deepen your professional skill set, you want to start a side hustle, or maybe you just want to explore a new passion, Skillshare is there to keep you learning and thriving. So just a couple of courses that are catching my eye right now. There's one called Get It Made, Get It Sold, The Basics of Sourcing and Sales for Entrepreneurs. Is there something you've wanted to make? Do you have an idea for a product, something that you would like to put into the world, but you just don't know where to start? This would be a course that would help you get started making that product and getting it out to the people that you want to serve. There's another one called Analytics and Authenticity on Instagram, Crafting Your Digital Presence. You know, so many people don't understand how to do Instagram well. And so this is a course that teaches you how to build an authentic presence, but also how to measure what really matters on Instagram. Illustrators, there's a course called Animation for Illustration, Adding Movement to Procreate and Photoshop. So maybe that's a skill that you want to learn. Maybe you're already a great illustrator, but you want to learn how to create movement in your illustrations. This is a course dedicated to doing it. It's a 51-minute course dedicated to teaching you just that. So listen, regardless of what you want to learn, regardless of where you want to go in your career, Skillshare has what you need to move to the next level. Join the millions of students already learning on Skillshare today with a special offer just for listeners of the Accidental Creative. Get 2 months of Skillshare for just 99 cents. That's right. Skillshare is offering listeners of the Accidental Creative 2 months of unlimited access to over 20,000 classes for just 99 cents. To sign up, go to skillshare.com/creative. Again, that's skillshare.com/creative to start your 2 months now. And we thank Skillshare for sponsoring this episode of the Accidental Creative Podcast. Well, it's great to welcome to the show today, Harris III. Harris, welcome to the Accidental Creative Podcast.
Thanks. Possibly the weirdest name of someone you've ever had.
Well, we had Harris the first and Harris the second on. This is the third in our series of interviews with Harris's. So it's great to have you on.
That's awesome.
Actually, would you mind just giving folks a little bit of insight into the name? Because it's a little unusual, right?
Yeah, I had a kid ask me the day, like, are you like a prince? Is your dad a king of a country or something?
That's awesome.
So it feels like less common these days to meet someone who is like a junior or a third or fourth or whatever. But yeah, I am the third person in my family with my name. Harris is actually my last name. But because I'm the third person in my family, the first and second names were already taken by the previous two generations. And so I ended up with a bunch of childhood nicknames growing up on the farm in the small town of East Tennessee that I grew up in. And none of those nicknames were very cool or appropriate. Starting in elementary and middle school. And so everyone in my life just started calling me Harris outside of my immediate family. And it just kind of stuck. And then when I started traveling and performing a lot, which I guess we might get into later, but everyone needed like a formal name because Harris made it sound like I was trying to be, it was too presumptuous. Like, oh, you're Britney or Cher or Madonna. Or whatever. Yeah.
So like, ladies and gentlemen, Harris. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, so the third just kind of stuck formally, but I really am a third. And yeah, it's weird, but just always been known as Harris the Third.
That's awesome. That's great. All right, so I want to dive into a lot of stuff. I don't even know where to begin with you, honestly, with this interview, because I've known you in a couple of different contexts. I've known you as a performer and a magician and someone who, you know, really travels the world, kind of amazing and astounding people with your craft, which is magic. And I've also known you as the curator and I guess I don't even know, like, not owner, I guess owner, but, you know, curator of the Story yeah. Conference, which is a conference I spoke at a few months ago in Nashville, and was really a very profound experience, so well created, so well crafted, so well curated. And so I would love, first of all, if you could just share with us a little bit about your craft, which is, you know, which is magic. You know, why were you drawn to magic as a form of creative expression?
Yeah, for a few different reasons, none of which I could articulate at the age of 9 when I was drawn to it. You know, when I was 9 years old, I was obsessed with baseball for some reason, which is funny because I wasn't even good at baseball. I sucked at baseball. And I was mostly into trading baseball cards more than playing baseball. But, you know, I grew up in a poor family. My parents had minimum wage jobs, and we didn't have the money to buy brand new gear anytime we wanted it. And so I remember being 9, and all I asked for Christmas that year was a brand new baseball glove. And no one to this day can help me understand why. I think it was just one of those random gifts, but the only thing I remember getting that year was a gift from my grandmother, and it was a box of magic tricks. And I think in that season, because I was mostly being bullied and picked on for not being great at much, when I learned my first trick out of boredom and performed it for my mom and dad, thinking they weren't going to be blown away, right? Because magic is, it's not always easy to perform, but the secret is usually a pretty simple concept to understand and know. Yeah. And so it's simple to understand, difficult to execute. So I'm seeing this very simple explanation going, that's it. That's not going to amaze anyone. Right. And then I go perform it for my mom and dad, and their eyes light up in wonder. They're like, how in the world did you do that? And so again, I don't think I realized it at the time, but looking back, I think it's the first time, literally the first time that someone else had looked at me with a look of awe and wonder in their eyes. And I kind of fell in love with that idea of like, man, I want to make other people respond that way. I want to make other people feel that same glimpse of wonder. And then it was later on that I realized it wasn't even magic. It was a medium of that I was using to tell stories. That it was really all about storytelling for the sake of amazing people and awakening wonder.
Yeah, and that has now become your profession. I mean, was that always what you knew you wanted to do, was to perform magic, or was it kind of a long and, as Mitch Joel would say, a squiggly path to get there?
Yeah. You know, I never had this moment where I woke up one day and said, I think I'm going to go pro, right? Like I'm going to take a shot at this. So that was at 9 years old. A couple years later, I finally got paid to do my first official show. It was $25, you know, and then I would book another $25 show. And it was like everything from performing at you know, parties, like birthday parties for kids in town, to like little small churches in the country, anyone that would let me do a magic show for people and write me a check for $25 or $50. And so it just kind of started happening more and more and more. Yeah. By the time I was 13, having business cards, and then 14, getting booked for like actual, what I would consider to be like professional events, and then performing a cruise ship for the first time at 16. And then, so I was practically making more money than my parents by 16, and was making an incredible successful living by 18. And so there was never, like I said, never this moment where I was like, oh, I'm gonna take a shot at this. It just kind of happened.
So what is it about magic, right? Because I think all of us, or at least I assume most of us, when we see a magician performing and, you know, executing their craft, I mean, nobody's thinking like, that guy's a wizard, right? Like, wow, that guy can do actual magic. I mean, we all know that there's something that we don't see that's going on. There's something that the magician knows that we don't know. I mean, it's probably, frankly, it's like the same feeling that I think a lot of people have when they see really great design. You know, a designer will look at that very differently than a non-designer. A non-designer is like, how in the world? It's magic. How did you make that? And a designer would look at it and say, oh, I see what you did there. You know, but what is it about magic that holds kind of a special place in people's hearts? And what is it that really draws us to magic, do you think?
I think it's because in a way we're all trying to get back, whether we realize it or not, to the innocence of our childhood. And there's something about magic that makes us feel like a little kid again. It challenges our belief of what's possible. You know, and look, that those are concepts that can get really deep really fast. And so what I'm not saying is that the average person sitting in a quote unquote magic show is sitting there going, wow, this is really challenging me to reimagine what I think is possible in my life. Right. But I think on a subconscious level, that's why people respond to magic with this sort of childlike giggle. Like when I do a magic trick in front of a group of adults, like grownups, the most common reaction is that people start laughing. They're just like, what? I don't understand what just happened. And it's not because I told a joke or even tried to be funny. It's that for a moment they got this little feeling of childlike wonder and their brain didn't know what to do with it. I think a lot of it has to do with that innocence of childhood that, you know, our hearts are probably constantly longing for, and that childlike feeling of wonder that you feel when you watch a magic trick.
Well,
magic isn't really something that you can see, right?
Yeah, well, and that's,
you don't see a magician perform magic.
Yeah, and if you do, I mean, even if you do, it doesn't have the same effect on you, right? Like if you see behind the scenes what's going on, you might say, wow, that was incredibly skillful, but it doesn't necessarily have that same childlike wonder effect on you. If you see behind the scenes, you know, when you see the craft practice. Although I will say, I went to see Penn and Teller recently out in Las Vegas, and the funny thing about their show is they explain every trick, right? They're like, this trick is done with an invisible thread, and yet you're still blown away because you're like, how in the world? You're just blown away by, you know, by the craftsmanship of the whole thing. You have used magic in a way that, I mean, I think all performing magicians do this, but I think to some extent you have really taken magic to another level by really infusing story and really trying to leverage story in how you communicate through your craft. I would love to hear how you think about story and why story is so important to really anyone who's trying to do something creative. Why do we have to think about story when we're making our art?
Well, you have to think about it because everyone is thinking in terms of story, whether they realize it or not. You know, like the laptop that I'm connected to you through right now is running off of an operating system called, actually, I don't know what it's called. It's whatever the latest version that Apple made, right? My parents have a computer that runs off of Windows. Well, the operating system of our brains is narrative. It's the language that we think in, and we can't not think. Again, it's story is how we organize information. It's how we make sense of everything in the world around us. And what that means is that if we're thinking in terms of narrative, even on a subconscious level, that we are constantly telling ourselves stories throughout the day. And so whether you feel like you're telling someone a story, they are telling themselves a story that, and they're basing that story on what they think that you are telling them. And like this, the simple, obvious examples are when you meet someone for the first time, that first impression, everything from the way that you're dressed to maybe the car they saw you pull up in the parking lot in, or how you walked, or all of your nonverbal facial cues that you give them, how warm you are, how you shook their hand. Even before you open your words and start your, well, here's who I am, once upon a time, that person has already started to tell themselves a story of who they think that you are. And so because everything is happening that way in the world, my opinion is that we should probably just go ahead and be intentional about trying to tell the story that we want to be told, as opposed to just leaving it up to the people that we are communicating to tell themselves their own story and fill in the blanks. Does that make sense?
It makes sense. Okay, so how do we do that? Because I think everybody agrees. I mean, everybody's nodding their head right now, but how do we do that? How do we begin to be more intentional about how we craft story through what we do?
Yeah, well, I think it starts with just being intentional. I know that sounds super obvious, but I don't think that's something that the majority of people are doing. We're not being as intentional. And I think we're being less intentional with that bigger paradigm of seeing the world through the lens of story. Now that storytelling is becoming a buzzword, it's like I hear people in meetings all the time say, like, yeah, I guess if we wanted to communicate that idea to people, one of the ways we could do that is by telling a story. And I understand what they mean, but what they're not understanding is that just however they choose to communicate that idea, whether they like it or not, they are telling a story, because it goes back to that. That's how our minds are wired, concept. So I think a good step one would just to be to pause and actually be intentional and go, okay, everyone's telling themselves a story about this, whether we like it or not. We should start by being intentional about the one that we're telling. From that point on, you can start to evaluate how we're intentional about telling stories, but that varies on medium and the type of story that's being told. I mean, you and I, this could last, like we could do an entire week long full day workshop every single day, 5 days in a row. It's like, here's how we do that. But it just depends on the medium that you're using and what the story is that needs to be told. That's where it becomes an art, right? And I think it's becoming, there are people that are trying to turn it into a science. We're trying to say, hey, now that everybody understands the power that stories have and brands are trying to get back to storytelling, it's like, here's how you tell stories. Here's the science behind it. And there are certainly frameworks that are helpful. But because stories go beyond just the words that we use or the images that we see on a screen or the way that pixels are formed around design on a piece of paper or on a tablet, that means that sometimes the frameworks can be helpful, but we have to take a step back and see it in this bigger narrative and recognize there is kind of an art to it.
So
this totally sounds like a cop-out.
No, it doesn't. I know it's a difficult, thing to drill down on, but I do want to kind of push a little bit because I think a lot of people are thinking, wait a minute. Okay. I've got a pitch that I need to make tomorrow to a client. And I know that the best way for me to create a hook for that client is to somehow draw them into the story of this pitch in some way. You know, if that's you, what are some of the questions maybe that you're asking as you begin to think about how you might want to craft that story or make that pitch in some way to your client?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think it begins with, a lot of us learn this in just basic communication technique, but starting with them in mind, like, why do they care? Who are they? What's their worldview? How are they seeing the world? You know, how to give persuasive presentations, which was a book published by Harvard Business Review. Nancy Duarte was the first person that I heard talk about this concept of positioning yourself as the guide and not the hero in the story, mm-hmm. which I think is what a lot of people don't do. They tend to position themselves as the center of attention and the hero. Right. But to use I think she uses a Star Wars analogy that basically, like, in that meeting that you're referring to, in that analogy, you as the person telling the story, you're actually Yoda, not Luke Skywalker. Because the person that you're speaking to, they all want to be the heroes in their own story. You're simply positioning yourself as the guide that can equip them with what they need to know or the things that they need to have, the tools and resources that they have to have at their disposal in order to accomplish whatever it is that they want to accomplish or to overcome whatever challenge they want to overcome. I think just starting there is a good spot because it repositions your role. It repositions the character that you're playing in that story.
That's such a hard thing, right?
A lot of people. Oh, for sure. Yeah.
I think we all want to be the hero. You know, we all want to be the one who comes in and saves the day. But that, even though we want to feel that way, that's not necessarily what the people we're trying to reach want. You know, they don't want a hero.
Exactly.
They want a guide. They want to be the hero.
Exactly. I think beyond that, where a lot of people stop short is they get the positioning right. And then they say all the right things or show all the right things, but they don't really make anyone feel anything. And that's because there's a lack of empathy. One of my favorite quotes that drives so much of our work in the live event and experience space is that people will always forget what they see you do. That's what she said. They'll forget what they see you do. They'll forget what they heard you say, but they'll never forget how you made them feel. Mm-hmm. And I think that applies to all of our work, even in business, that I see so many companies, especially at corporate events, and just because that's the space I'm operating in so often, they spend so much money on live production and spectacle, these big video walls or a million lights that move around. And they even hire in incredible people that are brilliant to come in to say really smart things. But over the course of that event, no one ever connected on a heart level. No one made them feel anything, which means all of that content that may indeed have been really valuable and intelligent, it's forgotten. And that means that event didn't have a huge amount of impact because it just never made them feel anything. But if we can make them feel something, well, then the stuff that they saw and the things that they heard all of a sudden will not be forgotten. Yeah. And all of the resources that were invested into creating that experience will foster all the things that they wanted it to. And so I think coming at that, to go back to your example, going into that meeting or that pitch or whatever it is, to just stop and pause, okay, now that I'm positioning myself in the right role in this story as the guide, how do I make these people feel something instead of just telling them smart things or showing them cool stuff?
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. And you know, that's what the Story Conference did for me, just to share a little bit of insight into my experience there. I mean, I go to a ton of events every year. I mean, I'm speaking at conferences, all the time. And very rarely do I feel a pull to stick around and kind of hang out and experience the entire event. But I felt like the Story Conference really connected on a deep level because I felt like you were telling stories that drew people in, stories that really sort of humanized the entire experience. And it didn't feel like, hey, we're going to talk at you now from the stage, but it felt like you were really drawing people in, even to the point of like you getting on stage and telling an emotional story about your childhood, right? And leveraging, and then sort of spinning that into an illusion of sort that sort of set the tone for the event. Or and even the branding this year of all the best ones are, all the best ones are mad from Alice in Wonderland. And I think it was a really beautiful and well-crafted event. So let me just ask you this, why do an event targeted at storytellers and telling stories?
Yeah, because I feel like storytellers are the sort of architects of culture. Every time we're frustrated by something that's happening in even our nation, America, we always look to D.C. But before D.C., people and politicians start arguing about legislation or passing bills, which just feels like is what consumes so much of our time and energy on social media and conversations with friends. But like before they start having those conversations and arguments, most of the time, there was an artist or a storyteller somewhere in the world that started that conversation 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. Hollywood was making a film about it, and then it just took politicians a long time to catch up. And even if you look at kind of world history, everything from kings in Europe to the Pope of the Catholic Church, there was always a handful of artists around that were called in to help guide those people on everything from like, how do I solve this problem to help me understand the people? And it feels like the artists of our time, the storytellers, always seem to have their fingers on the pulse of culture. Mm-hmm. And so I think storytellers are constantly the ones who get to decide what the future of our world looks like. And so there's kind of this, dual motive. When people come to Story Conference and they give up their company's resources to send a team, and they're investing in buying a ticket or registration. I legitimately do want to send them home with enough value so they keep coming back again. I want their work to get better. I want them to find creative insights and sparks that lead to innovation, and they leave more inspired than they've ever been. So there is a value proposition there that I want to deliver on. But simultaneously, man, if I'm honest, I have this ulterior motive, and that is to sort of help them understand the power that they have as storytellers in the world, and just sort of call them to action and responsibility and say, hey, if you are powerful, with great power comes great responsibility. And so we have to learn that how we tell stories matter, and that the narratives that we're putting into the world and establishing, both in our own lives for our own stories and the stories that we're telling on behalf of the brands that hire us, they really do matter, and the future of humanity is at stake. And it's all because of the power that the people in that room have. And that's a big idea. And so I hope they kind of leave with the weight of that and feel inspired to make a difference as well.
That's great. Well, Harris, if people want to connect with you and the work that you do and want to learn more about Story, where can they go?
Yeah, they can go to storygatherings.com to kind of learn about the different gatherings that we do. Like you said, we have a story conference. We have some workshops coming out. But that's all at storygatherings.com. My personal website is harrisathird.com. That site is kind of built around this concept of magic. You know, like I said earlier, magic is not something that you can see. It's ironic, right? Because people like you call people like me magicians, even though you led with saying we know it's not actually sorcery or magic or like witchcraft or whatever. So if it's just a trick, that means, so what is magic? And I think we, somewhere along the way, someone started calling it that because it looked like magic. But I now realize magic is not something that you can watch a magician do. Magic is that childlike feeling that you have in response to something that seemed impossible. So you can't see magic at a magic show, but you can certainly feel it. And we're all searching for that in our lives. And I think that magic can transform everything from our work to our leadership to our creative process to how we raise our kids. So that whole side of my life is at harrisathird.com, and everything else is at Story Gatherings.
All right. Well, we've been talking with Harris III. Harris, thanks so much for taking the time to be with us today.
Man, it's my pleasure. Love what you're doing. The work you're doing in the world is so important. Thanks for inviting me into it.
And as always, thank you for listening. If you like this episode, make sure you subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts or at accidentalcreative.com/subscribe. Also, check out The Daily Creative, my new show. Remember, friends, cover bands don't change the world. Don't be a cover band. You need to find your unique voice if you want to thrive. We'll see you next time.